Everything is connected, and I'm here to tell you how. I'm Dr. Laura Hansen with Connect My Brain. This podcast is for moms who are concerned about their child's development. The brain impacts our mind, body, and overall health. I explain how your brain is wired, what happens when it's out of balance, and how early childhood development not only impacts your child, but can affect you as an adult years later. Want to know how to improve your life? Join me and learn about your amazing brain and what it can do for you. Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Laura with Connect My Brain. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Boy, have I got a treat for you. I know we've been talking about some other things, but when the moments come up and we get an opportunity to have a guest and bring you some incredible information, I got to open the platform. So today we have Gina Mundy, an attorney specializing in childbirth cases, best-selling author of the book, A Parent's Guide to Safer Childbirth, and a mother of three. Welcome, Gina, to Connect My Brain. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you, Dr. Laura, for having me. I am definitely excited for today's conversation.
Great. Well, let's dive in. So why did you write this book? Tell us about it.
I'm like, that's a huge question, but I'll shorten it the best I can. So it all starts with my professional career. I have been an attorney specializing in childbirth cases for 21 years. So, and just so your audience understands what that means, a childbirth case involves the birth of a baby. When something goes wrong, whether it's a mistake, a complication, baby is not born healthy. Sometimes baby may pass during childbirth, or sometimes mom may pass during childbirth. As the attorney, I come in and I find out what happened, what went wrong, why. The most important question I need to, you know, answer is what should have been done so baby would have been born healthy, mom around to raise her baby. So those questions have taken me across the United States many, many times, even Georgia, and just meeting with delivery teams and hashing out every aspect of labor and delivery. You know, unlike a medical professional who gets to see the good and the bad, you know, in my profession, I really only see the bad. And not only that, I have to sit and analyze it for years on end. These cases take many years to litigate and get through the system. So 19 years deep into my profession, we had like a near, close, tragic, you know, family event. Baby's okay. I'm going to put that out there. But we went about 20 minutes without knowing whether my niece's baby was going to make it or not. So that day, it was March 17th, 2021. I was in my kitchen, surrounded by my kids and family. My phone rang. We were expecting to hear the good news that my niece Sam had her baby. It would be the first baby of our next generation. So we were all very excited. And instead, it was one of those moments you will never forget where you were. I picked up the phone and it was my sister screaming hysterically. That's Sam's mom, my sister. The baby crashed, and the baby just, it went down. And it was just like reliving my cases and when I talk to a family, that's what they tell me happened. And I had been, you know, aware of what had been going on during her labor. So I ran out of my house. I sat there. I did my attorney analysis. But as I listened to my sister sob, I went from, you know, my attorney analysis to, you know, wife, aunt, mother, human. And I realized that, you know, this is what the families have been telling me. They tell me about this moment. It's this transitional period where you have, your life before baby and you have your life after baby. And I'm like, are we sitting in this moment? And, you know, it stopped my whole life. It was crazy. We got word the baby would be okay eventually. But that moment in time, I'll never be able to explain it. But I basically started to think, as you said in the introduction, I have three kids. I have two daughters. They're 19 and 15, and I have a 9-year-old son. And I can tell you, because of what I've seen, how my kids will be prepared for childbirth is completely different than how a normal family would prepare for childbirth because of what I've seen. So I started to think, wait, what if I'm not around? You know, I was 1,100 miles from Sam that day. And she's actually the introduction to the book because she is really, you know, that is her labor and delivery and why I wrote it. But I was 1,100 miles from her that day, and I started to think, what if I'm 1,100 miles and my kids go into labor and away? So I started writing down everything that I had seen. You know, unfortunately, in these cases, there are reoccurring issues. There are reoccurring facts. And I wanted to get this down to make sure what I have seen for 21 years did not happen to the birth, you know, during the birth of my grandkids. However, once I started writing this down, I realized that this is just not information that will help my kids have healthy babies, but this is information that will help families around the world help them have those healthy babies and avoid the mistakes and complications that I've seen for so many years.
Are there certain, like you said, there's reoccurring events. What would you say are two or three of those reoccurring events?
So number one most common fact or issue in a legal baby case is the drug Pitocin. Pitocin is the drug that is used to induce mom's labor by making her uterus contract. If there is a mistake or there is a complication, most of the time that is a labor that is some type of, you know, Pitocin's running. And that's the majority of my cases. Now, with that said, what I don't see a lot in my cases, and I think this is good for everybody to know, natural, spontaneous, vaginal birth, skip the drugs. Those don't land on my desk. Those parents, they don't even know who I exist. But Pitocin induction, unfortunately, is just one of those circumstances that, you know, can cause injury to mom or baby. Because of that and because of what I've seen for 20, you know, I wrote the book, it was 19 years. Basically, I wrote a chapter on how to have a safe Pitocin induction. Now, listen, some doctors may read my chapter 14 and be like, that's what I do. Perfect. Awesome. I love it. Thank you. Other doctors, you know, do not follow, you know, chapter 14. So that's why it's out there, because I'll tell you, I think doctors across the board, delivery teams across the board, you know, Pitocin can be a really good option for some patients. It's just that different hospitals, different delivery teams, different doctors administer it differently. Mm-hmm. But there is definitely a safe way to do a Pitocin induction. So I cover that, you know, in my book. Another very common issue and common fact in a baby case is a busy labor and delivery unit. I sit down with the delivery team and they'll be like, I remember that day. It was so busy. I mean, it's like, here we go again. So that's because the delivery team is running hard. They're thinned out and eyes are off the prize. So it's really important. You know, by the way, when I do identify these issues in my book, I tell you how to make sure it doesn't happen to you, you know, i.e. Pitocin, but hold on, if you're going to have one, this is what you need to know. Same thing with the busy labor and delivery unit. I'm like, okay, you know, this is how you're going to have to, you know, handle that. Now, listen, mom, you're in labor. So you're in a different state of mind. You're really mentally, you're putting everything into having this baby. So I tell you, listen, have somebody else there who knows how to advocate for you. I call them the baby advocate. It's another chapter in my book. Tell baby advocate, this is what you need to know so mom can chill out, relax, and have her baby in peace. Because what you want to avoid is obviously fight or flight mode. But busy labor and delivery unit. But again, I tell you how to handle that. And, you know, this is an interesting one. Number three, this is such great information because I think everybody just is always like, okay, when this recommendation is made, but mistakes and complications almost always occur after mom's water breaks. That is a huge decision. So doctors, when they recommend, remember moms, you are the decision maker, not the doctor. Your doctors are they're like medical advisors. Your delivery team are medical advisors. So when they're recommending, even though they sometimes word it in a way that they're telling you, no, it's a recommendation all day long. So keep that in mind. If they recommend, let's break your water, you want to respond with, is there a medical reason to break my water or do you want to be home for dinner? I've heard both. So, very, very important, because what happens when you break the water It changes the baby's environment. So baby is in your uterus, hanging out with the placenta, hanging out with the umbilical cord, all of that. That's the lifeline where baby gets their oxygen, and everything is surrounded by fluid. So when you drain the fluid out of the uterus, it changes that environment. And then sometimes it can make baby more vulnerable to injury depending on how it changed that environment. So again, identify that, but I'm like, okay, so when that happens, you know, make sure you, if your doctor is like, there is a medical reason, this is why, and you decide, yes, you want to break your water. Obviously I guide you on, okay, well, once that happens, you know, just keep an eye on, you know, X, Y, Z. So those are probably the top three in my book. It's chapter 11. I identify 10 total. But those are probably the three ones that I just love to get out there. So parents do have that heightened sense of awareness. And, you know, if you know this stuff, it will help to even activate your intuition, because you don't know what you don't know. And the importance of good decision making during labor is so incredibly important. And I just cannot emphasize it enough as an attorney, you know, specializing in childbirth cases.
Well, I love what you are laying out there, and especially in my profession. One of the things that we advocate when we have an opportunity to work with a woman that is either planning a pregnancy, which I am a huge advocate for, and or you are pregnant, but it's the birth plan and looking at all of those elements prior to the event of birth. Like you said, a woman is in a completely different state of mind during labor and delivery. That's not the time to have all these, like, what do you mean kind of questions. Pitocin causes hard, irregular contractions where mama's body is innately designed to have a contraction from the top of the uterus to the bottom that kind of creates like a Tootsie Roll impact and help the baby down. When you add Pitocin, it's a hard, irregular type of a contraction. And for the podcast audience, I'm sitting there waving my hands, showing like hard squeezes versus this nice Tootsie Roll kind of impact. And I love what you said, comparing people that have had the typical type of delivery that I think every woman would love to have, a natural delivery. But it's so interesting because in the diagnostic statistical manuals, pregnancy is actually listed as a disease. So in our healthcare system, we treat it like a disease. We don't treat it as an innate thing that a woman is innately designed to have, get pregnant and have a baby. So what happens in traditional healthcare is they have laid out all these different criterion in order to have a diagnosis code. And so we take that right away from her. And over the years, you know, this is where our culture has gone. And now here's an attorney writing a book about all the things that you've seen when there are so many people even in healthcare that are trying to do the same thing. But sometimes we get called unicorns and things of that nature. But I'm so grateful that you have put your professional opinion out there and shown, you know, the thing about water. Once they break that water, it's a 24-hour thing. You got to get the baby out. So if your baby really wasn't ready, you've just now, like you said, you've changed the environment and there could be infection, there could be injury. So in order to bring their risk factors down, you got 24 hours. And these rooms in the hospital, they're timed events. And we've got to realize that you've got to progress at a certain point. So if that labor and delivery unit is busy, so many things could potentially happen. So this is almost like, you know, like minds, but two totally different professions and perspectives. And we, you know, the very first baby that I had, turned out to be what they're going to call an emergency C-section. And it was 36 years ago, and I was actually studying to be an attorney. This is what I was looking for prior to going into healthcare. But I knew nothing. I knew absolutely nothing. And my baby got stuck. And before you know it, they're breaking the water. He got stuck. Then it was a very aggressive push him out of there. And then, you know, or push him back up. And then they did a C-section where now later, my second child, 24 years later, I actually had her at home. But it was because I was educated. And most, you know, most medical providers, they don't want to do a vaginal delivery after a C-section. But I did. I spent the time and energy learning. And I did. I had a home delivery and it was fantastic. And the two differences of those experiences, I know, have influenced my thought process and how we go about it. So tell us about your, what was your childbirth like with your three kids?
So that's always an interesting question. So my first baby was 2004. And so I wasn't too far into my profession, but it was enough to scare me a little bit, as you know, because I see different things and I know different things than most people. And let me reassure your audience who's interested in reading the book. None of what I really know or see is in my book. My book's about not what can go wrong, but making sure it can go right. So whenever I'm saying something, definitely there's a reason behind it. But I may not always share that reason because, you know, I did write it for expecting parents, and I'm definitely, you know, I've had three babies. So the information is so incredibly important. I don't want to scare anybody into not reading it. So, but anyway, back to mine. So basically 2004, I just wanted an elective C-section. That's very common with baby lawyers because we just cannot relax to go into labor. And so what my friends would do that were baby lawyers is I wrote this literally in the book because I still can't believe it to this day. They told their doctor they had herpes. So when they were pregnant, they delivered same time as me. 2004, if you told your doctor you have herpes, you got your elective C-section. I was not about to tell my doctor I had herpes. I was like, I'm not putting that in my medical records. It's not true. Anyway, so I'd go to my doctor and I'd be like, I really want an elective C-section. Well, they were controversial in 2004. He's like, Gina, let's just see how you do. Maybe you can do it. I had a really great doctor who, you know, I felt like he was like my doctor and my shrink. And so I woke up actually on April 4th, 2004. So 4404. And I was in pretty hardcore labor. Like I was almost wanting to push, and I'm like, what? I must have slept through the initial contractions, which doesn't surprise me. I was always exhausted. And I get to the hospital and I did try a vaginal birth, and that wasn't happening. So they eventually did just C-section me. And then my next two were elective C-sections after that. So, but it's just hard for us to relax. When I was hired in to my firm, probably the one of the most disturbing things was I was hired in with a team of over 20 of us.
Wow.
All we did were baby cases. And so there were, you know, especially back then, a lot of things going wrong.
So how can people, what kind of steps can parents do to find the right kind of doctor? What kind of steps can they take? Kind of like this birth plan idea. What can they do either prior to getting pregnant, or maybe they're pregnant right now listening to us? What are some things that you would make a suggestion would be a good idea for them to promote a safer delivery of their baby?
Sure. So chapter 4, I wrote how to find a good doctor. And basically that's because for 21 years, I have analyzed the OBGYNs, the doctors who, you know, deliver babies. But I even have suggestions. I don't know if anybody has access to something like a labor and delivery nurse or somebody who's on a delivery team at a hospital. let me tell you, they know who the good and bad doctors are. If you have access to a childbirth attorney like me in the local area, we have a lot of insight on that also. But trying to ask maybe family, friends, get out there and try to get a personal recommendation. Now, listen, good reputation does not equate to good care. So you still have to roll up, talk to your doctor, and not assume because he or she was referred to you that this is a good doctor. And I tell of a story in my book that demonstrates that. It's called The Yoda Imposter. It's very interesting. So, and that's information that not only can you take during your pregnancy, that's follow that with the rest of, the doctors in your life. But basically, as an attorney, I have to figure out when I would sit down with a doctor, cross-examine a doctor, whatever, is this a good doctor or a bad doctor? Because you cannot stick a bad doctor in front of a jury. A jury is made up of, our peers. This is not Harvard where, we got to be smart and whatever. Like, juries can pick up on good and bad doctors. So for 21 years, I've done my doctor analysis. I share that. And then I'm like, okay, moms, dads, time for your doctor analysis, because your doctor heads your delivery team, or somebody in their practice heads your delivery team. Your delivery team is responsible for bringing your baby safely into this world. When I have a legal case, it is their care that is at issue and analyzed more than any other aspect of the case. So having that good doctor that can head that delivery team is huge. And another thing, your doctor typically, unless they're picking up a shift at the hospital, is not at the hospital during your labor. Who's at the hospital hanging out with you? Your delivery team. Your delivery team is typically the people who are scheduled to work that day. So it's definitely a dynamic that you must be aware of, but picking that good doctor, making sure they have good communication skills. So when you meet your doctor for the first time, and as your pregnancy progresses and you meet with them more, you've got to have this feeling that you can ask your doctor anything. You can talk to your doctor about things. If you are intimidated by your doctor, or you don't feel like you can ask questions, those are red flags. Because how your doctor communicates with you is likely how they communicate with your delivery team. Again, your delivery team is going to be giving you direct patient care, direct care during your labor, and then communicating with your doctor. So a doctor with bad communication, it's a huge problem. Your doctor should also speak, and I said this earlier in the podcast, to you in a form of he's giving you or she's giving you recommendations. They should not be like, this is this and this is that. No, they're your medical advisors. You're hiring them. So just keep that in mind. But one of the basic things that I rely on, and maybe it's easier for me to do as a mom, mom, and it'll be easy, maternal instincts go in definitely, I feel like overdrive, intuition and instincts go in overdrive when you have a baby in your belly. So follow them. Mm-hmm. And pay attention to them, because they are trying to, help you and guide you. But that's one of the parts of the analysis. Follow your instinct, follow your intuition. Very, very important. And then I go through 20 questions that I think every patient should understand about their doctor. You might be able to find answers by yourself or ask your doctor. But these are questions we ask doctors in every single case. Before I stick them in front of a jury, these are 20 things I want to know. Again, jury of our peers, nothing fancy. But these are really important questions that could, impact, your doctor's, decisions or recommendations that are made, or, could impact in some way, shape, or form your childbirth.
Can you give us an example of one question?
Absolutely. So one of the first questions I ask a doctor when I sit down with them, so a doctor who delivers babies, actually I'll back up, is an OBGYN. OB, obstetrics, pregnancy, GYN, gynecology. Gynecology is more women's health issues, nothing to do with pregnancy. So you want to find out when you sit down with your doctor, is the majority of their practice, so I always say, what percentage of your practice is obstetrics, delivering babies and feeling, and doing managing pregnant patients? What percentage of your practice is GYN? You want a doctor who is mainly practicing obstetrics and not GYN. Listen, I don't know if OBGYNs think through their profession before they commit to it, but the obstetrical part of their profession is extremely difficult because babies want to come when babies want to come. Obstetrics is not 9 to 5. Obstetrics is, you know, it's nights, it's weekends or whatever. So as doctors get older, they sometimes shift over to GYN. GYN is women's issues, typically more 9 to 5 type job. So it's really important that you figure it out because you want the doctor who is in the trenches delivering babies all the time. They're going to have a better relationship with the people at the hospital. They're going to have their communication down versus a GYN who's just delivering a handful of babies every year or every few months. That's not who I would be picking. I would be going with a doctor who's in the trenches delivering the babies and whatnot. But that's huge.
I think that is great advice. I mean, one little question tells you so much. And so in your book, you've actually got a list of these 20 questions that you typically ask these providers.
100%.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And listen, I use it because these are questions because either I'm going to use their answers to bolster their credibility in front of a jury or discredit them in front of a jury. So if a doctor wants to get up and talk about labor and delivery and they deliver 2 kids a year, yeah, good luck. But the jury, I can tell.
Oh, you're good. I would want you on my side. That's for sure.
I appreciate that. But then you get a doctor up there and they're in the trenches every day delivering babies. Who's the jury going to believe? Right? Because these doctors, it's a case. This is an adversarial proceeding. You have doctors on one side and you have doctors on the other. And ultimately, when you have these cases, a lot of times in front of a jury, depending on how it transpires, it's battle of the experts, battle of the doctors.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, that's one of the things that, and anytime I ever talk to somebody, is I do believe in making interview relationships with anybody that's going to do anything with you. I totally agree with you. A healthcare provider, regardless of your specialty, you have to be available to talk to people. But unfortunately, I think we're coming out of it, but somewhat, but I think our healthcare system, mainly from the medical model for so many years, was really put up on a pedestal. And so over time, people were just, oh, I'm so grateful that you'll help me. Even if like that percentage of that person's profession was only 2% compared to the other 98 that they actually do that has nothing to do with your problem. Last year, I brought my mom to Georgia, and unfortunately, she's in a nursing home. And now we've had our second event where she had to go to the hospital. But I have to tell you, this last experience was absolutely incredible. From Sunday to yesterday, I spoke to more doctors than I have ever spoken to. And I am 63 years old. And these people called me, asked me if I had any questions, allowed me to freely ask questions, then even said to me, okay, let's take these one at a time. We do have to expect, we are hiring these people to care for our health, our loved one's health, our bringing our baby into the world. And we have a right to know why you're doing what you're doing. And so I'm just so happy to hear from a totally different profession, you're encouraging people, ask questions. Know exactly why a decision is being made. And if somebody won't answer your questions, that's a red flag. So that's huge. So what was it like writing this book? Like, what was your, like, when did this book get published? What year?
June 2023. So it took 14 months, thousands of hours, you know, right after my niece's delivery, when I started to write the book. You know, it's interesting. Oh, I'm going to write a book. That's really hard. And so I'm a partner in a law firm. I have 3 kids. I'm married to a super busy business owner. it's very, it wasn't anything that, you know, you had thought. Now you got to act on it, right? So then basically it was cutting out a lot of parts of my life, my social life, that's gone. But I still, family is the most important thing. But anyway, so basically this is what I had to do. I wake up at 3 a.m. and I still do it to this day. But I get up at 3 a.m. and I wrote my book basically in the middle of the night. I would get to the point where I made dinner about 5 o'clock. We'd have everything cleaned up and I had to be asleep by 7. But it was the perfect time to write a book because your brain is so fresh. You know, I talk to people who try to write a book at night and I'm like, what are you on crack? Like, I couldn't write a book at night. Like, no.
I couldn't either.
But, yeah, you know, and I'll tell you, so you think 3 a.m., but then for the first 3 months, I cried every single morning. I couldn't stop crying. I almost called a therapist. What I realized is writing that book was actually very therapeutic for me. The hardest part of my job has always been the day I have to sit down with the families and go over the day they had their baby. And I've always struggled with that. But clearly, for the first 19 years, I emotionally suppressed it, continued on with my life. And so when I had to go back and go through my cases, just it all came out. But then after 3 months, there was definitely this clarity that I had the knowledge that I could help parents have healthy babies, you know, and basically, you know, not these families, they don't have to endure what the other families, you know, that I've encountered in my cases have, because it's life changing. I don't know how they ever move on from it. So once I had that clarity, I mean, I woke up at 3 a.m. just ready to go. And I was excited. And it was definitely an interesting journey.
So is there another book in the mix?
Interesting. Great question. Yes, there is. And hence why I still get up at 3 a.m. No, but it's also because now I'm doing more like shows and podcasts. And I love to get out there and just educate families and other people like, hey, you're like this different perspective. But so my book is just really strictly childbirth. The next book is pregnancy. So we do, because my cases do sometimes involve the prenatal course, the pregnancy aspect, or something happens in pregnancy that affects childbirth. It's kind of all interrelated. But a lot of that, the pregnancy stuff actually was written, but at the end, it became so overwhelming. I'm like, I have to divide. So one went childbirth and the other is pregnancy. So.
Well, we're going to have to have some chats because you are totally right. They are completely intertwined. Mm-hmm. I have a huge focus in the brain and, you know, I've been in practice now 29 years and this whole evolution of where I went from as a traditional chiropractor to developing what I have over here, there's a three-tier approach of mechanical chemical brain. The brain is so susceptible in pregnancy. And so now looking at all these things that we see with children today, and that's probably going to be your third book, is you look at the developmental journey of the child. I'm actually writing a book right now myself. I'm just finishing up the organization in one more chapter, but it's about the developmental journey. And because we're losing a generation of kids and, you know, depending upon who you want to quote, it could be anywhere from one in 20 something are going to be diagnosed autistic, but it's like one in five have some kind of altered learning compared to the world. And then 2 years ago, the CDC changed all the developmental milestones. So we're actually normalizing developmental delay. But some of the red flags that I see is the kids that start off very early, colicky, and then kind of go into the stare, especially after vaccines or an illness, something may have happened during pregnancy. And so during pregnancy, that's when that baby's brain is open and developing. Then compared to, okay, maybe you got through pregnancy and delivery okay, but now you've got all these insults and your body just cannot, you know, the immune system is not working the way that it's supposed to. And then all of a sudden the kids go into a stare. So this is another area that, especially as an attorney, I would almost ask you to pray about going into this area, because we're losing kids. I mean, this is ridiculous to see. I mean, everybody knows somebody that has a kid with autism now. Everybody knows a kid with ADD.
Yep.
And this just isn't right. And people look at like things like, oh, strep is just a common illness. No, strep is a bacteria that can actually cross the blood-brain barrier and put you in pans and pandas. And it can also crawl up your vagus nerve and get in your brain. Well, every kid has attention problems. No, attention is actually something the brain can put together. Why isn't your child paying attention? It is not a lack of stimulant medication. And now we know that, well, first of all, these drugs are not evaluated on any kid under the age of 18. And then you put it in a developing brain, you're changing. That becomes a role model of how the synapse is going to communicate. And so now we've got a lot of 20s and 30-year-olds who have that in their history, and their memory is shot. So you, I think, Miss Mundy, are headed into a direction. Not quite sure you're ready to do it all, but boy, we're going to ask you to do it all, because we do need that legal support.
Interesting, Laura. I'm like obsessed with the brain and how it works and everything you just said. Okay, you are not far off. And the trilogy is pregnancy, childbirth, neonatal. But if I ended up doing something with the brain and everything else, because of the cases and the damages, I have to study brain imaging. You know, we do something. Are you familiar with cooling? Cooling is a fascinating thing after birth, where the baby sustains an injury right at birth and they go into cooling. I have always retained neurologists, pediatric neuroradiologists, you know, genetic, everything with the brain. So,
well, we have to keep our communication up. Anything that I could ever do, I do brain mapping over here. I am board certified in QEEG, and I'm board certified in neurofeedback. And it's one of these things that I wanted to make sure that in case I was ever put on the hot seat and had to defend what I do, I have all the credentials I'm supposed to have, because I don't want to be just put into a box. But, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to pull together some amazing professionals that we can build our own resource network. So I do want to put you on our resource. I want to put your book up there so that people can get it. So make sure you send me links and I will get that on my website. But why don't you tell everybody how they can find you, how they can get your book? And we just can't thank you enough for sharing your time, your expertise, and your wisdom with our audience.
Oh, Dr. Laura, you are so wonderful. Thank you. But the best place to find me will always be GinaMundy.com, GINAMUNDY.com. Thanks to book, information for parents. I am actually doing the same thing you are with putting a resource area for expecting parents. I do have a blog, and I have some other stuff that I'm just building, because, you know, whatever I can do to help parents have a healthy baby, I'm like, okay, GinaMundy.com. So it's always this work in progress. So you have to make sure you send me, you are absolutely amazing. And, you know, something we haven't talked about, like, you know, in my cases, but like the stuff you do with your prenatal chiropractic stuff. I read all of that. I've gotten to understand that field, and I had to understand it because it's not in any of my cases. So that means in my cases, if a mom is pregnant and she would, or before or during, sees you then now you're like a fact witness in my case. Like a jury would get your, you know, the records that you produce as, you know, her, as her doctor and whatnot. But these are, you know, the chiropractic adjustments, because people who do the physical therapy, prenatal stuff, that is in none of my cases. So that is extremely important. Like another thing that's not in my cases, doulas. Doulas are not in my cases.
Oh, that's what I had with my second, is a doula.
Oh, I love doulas. I'm a huge fan. But anyway, stuff. So the things that you're doing prenatally to help your patients are helping them to have a healthy baby. My point is too, I'm going to go ahead and take your information. I'll throw it up on my website also, but I love the prenatal chiropractic stuff. I'm becoming a huge advocate of it because it is helping parents for sure, or moms for sure. And if anybody does want to buy my book, the easiest way right now is Amazon. And if you just put my name, Gina Mundy, in the search bar, that may change or whatnot. But no matter what, links to my book, how to buy my book, is always on my website, ginamundy.com.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure getting to know you. And I look forward to hanging out with you, and just anything we can do to help have healthy babies is the thing I like to be involved in.
I absolutely love it. You are so amazing. Your patients and clients are so lucky.
Oh, thanks. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Remember, you can always send a question through the website at connectmybrain.com. And don't forget, the app is coming out very soon. I think we're there maybe within the next few days. And we're going to put in your hands what your baby should be doing at what time. And the blogs are there, the podcasts are there. And then be sure and go over and look at the eSchool. We've got our memberships, the Jumpstart for Your Child, the Parent Membership, and the Professional Development Membership. Okay, so have a great day and be blessed. Thanks for listening. I hope today's lesson will help you or someone you love. Do you have a question or just really want to talk to somebody about brains? Connect with me over on Facebook or Instagram at Connect My Brain. Looking to understand and optimize your particular brain? Check out connectmybrain.com. for course information and resources. A special thanks to Marcy Page for producing this episode. See you next class.